Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine. My name is Duwanza. It's great to be with you. Very, very pleased to have another opportunity to talk about entrepreneurship. You know, it's a great day to talk about entrepreneurship. Every day is a great day to talk about entrepreneurship. You know, Professor Geiger, of course, is my special guest today. He's a regular on the show, comes on every 2 weeks, and we have an opportunity to discuss his book, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. And this is the fourth edition, and for those who are not familiar with Professor, I'll share a little bit about Professor Geiger with you. He currently lives in Richmond, Virginia, and he grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business at the University of Denver. And over his lifetime, he started over 10 businesses, two of which predated his college graduation. And after his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship and small business management. And in order to help people like yourself and myself succeed in business, he wrote Entrepreneurial Success. It started off as 101 Practical Business Principles, The Road to the Top. Also, this book is not just about business and entrepreneurship. These principles are also appropriate and can be applied to life itself, life in general. Some of the principles you'll see as we go through the book, you'll be able to apply not just in business, but also in life. Great to have you back, Professor. I'm just excited to have another opportunity to talk with you. And I just want to share with the listeners briefly, you know, you and I were talking off air just about, you know, the stuff that's going on in the world, you know, just in terms of calamities. You know, there are things happening in the world. There are wildfires in California. We've talked about hurricanes and how people have to start over and how just 1 minute you can be doing fine and the next minute, you know, your whole world could be turned upside down. And even in life, even as it relates to entrepreneurship, you mentioned a statistic that I thought was pretty staggering. And if you would please quote that, I would appreciate it, just that in the course of a person's lifetime, there's statistics that show that entrepreneurship is on the rise and that during a person's lifetime, there are certain percentages that they will at some point be an entrepreneur, start their own business at some point. And some of that is born out of necessity. Sometimes it's not just that you're working a regular job and you decide, oh, let me start something on the side and build it up. Sometimes it's born because, you know, you lost your job because of some tragedy, quote, unquote, that may happen that causes you to actually go into a field of endeavor that you just might not have thought that you would ever do.
Yeah, that's the truth. The federal one of the departments in the feds has had a long-term study of entrepreneurship. And basically what they do is the IRS sends them tax returns. And they don't actually send the actual tax return. They just, what they do is they send to them the sources of income. So the federal government that does this doesn't know who you are. They don't have any names. All they have is correlated data. So they know that a certain number of people work for the government in its various forms, state, local, et cetera, and others work for private industry, and then from that it breaks down into manufacturing and retail and so on. One of the things that they have figured out, and this figure is from about 2005 or 6, that 33% of all income earners will at some time in their lifetime be entrepreneurs. The word that they use is proprietors, but it's the word we use, entrepreneurs, more often than proprietors. That has been going up. It's probably today, looking at the way it's going up, it's probably at or a little above 40% now. And I ran across some data just very recently that is really kind of interesting. And it says that black women in particular are starting businesses much, much faster, at a greater rate percentage-wise than any other group. Women in general start it much faster, but black women are really the heroes of this. They are starting it much faster than men of any type. And then there's some other things that are kind of interesting is where do these come from? Black women start service more than others. And by service, I don't mean that the maids or something like that. It's just in the general service, sales service industry. As a group, doctors start at a higher percentage than anybody else. That's MDs. And the next highest is contractors. So plumbers, roofers, you know, builders and so on. They start at a much higher degree, higher percentage than any other than MDs. So there's some really interesting data. If you were to decide on let's say you wanted to go to a junior college, and you don't know what you want to major in, so you decide, well, I want to go to a junior college. And I don't know what to major in. The best guess, if you were just had no other guess, would be entrepreneurship by a wide margin. I mean, they're just way, way ahead of everybody else. And because nobody else has more than 10% of the market except entrepreneurs. And they have a very high percentage.
You know, what's interesting, Professor, you shared something and it just made me think, and I don't know if people readily think about doctors who start their own practice as entrepreneurs, you know, as opposed to, you know, starting their own practice as opposed to working for a hospital or something. You know, I think that people don't even consider that as an entrepreneurial venture. If a doctor opens up his own office, you know, he's just, hey, it's private practice, you know. And I think, you know, the thought might be for a lot of people when they think of entrepreneurship as a company, you know, that you've actually started a company and you not necessarily that you just opened up an office and you practice out of your office. Would you agree with that, that that's pretty much the thought?
Yeah, I think that probably is the thought of people who don't know much about the industry, but it's just starting an office. The reason that doctors do it, an awful lot of it, is for legal liability. If they operate as a corporation, they have one more barrier between their personal net worth and somebody who wants to sue them. And I suspect that is a major reason. And it's not necessarily that they open a practice. If you go to a doctor who has an office in a hospital or works in a hospital, the odds are fairly high that he is working there as a outside contractor, and they really contract with his business, and he works there. It's a very technical thing, but they try to somebody like that whose likelihood of getting sued is very high. They just try to put up as much barriers as they can, so that when they get sued, they have to go through the corporate shield. And then they have to go after them personally. And this isn't necessarily because they have done something wrong. Doctors are, you know, people expect a perfect outcome. Well, if you're building a house, you have a better chance of having a perfect outcome. You can take a look at the materials that you're building with and so on. But if you're a doctor, you're dealing with a live, breathing being, and there's just it's pretty hard to guarantee perfect outcomes. I wouldn't want to do that because so much of it is just totally out of your hands that kinds of stuff can go wrong.
Even though they have waivers that they have the patient sign and all kinds of stuff, they still, I guess, are pretty much open for malpractice lawsuits and so forth.
Yep. Well, Stormy Daniels signed a waiver. Didn't keep her from suing Trump. She signed a waiver. So she guaranteed she would never, ever, ever sue Trump, but she did.
Mm-hmm.
And so you sign a waiver, and then an attorney says, well, we'll just sue anyway. And so it's not the easiest thing in the world, but they're kind of unusual. Doctors, dentists, dentists who work for a large corporation, where I go, for example, they're a regional series of dental offices, and they have dentists working there. And I suspect a number of them have a corporate entity there just to prevent them, just like I say, another barrier to help them, to protect them from malicious lawsuits. You know, basically you have somebody who makes a whole lot of money, and attorneys say, well, they got a lot of money, we can sue them.
You know what, it's good that we're talking about this, because at some point during the discussion this evening, we'll get into Chapter 6. We'll be moving into Chapter 6, which is legal and ethical issues. Very important chapter in the book. I mean, they're all important, but definitely if you're going to become an entrepreneur, you definitely need to know the information in this chapter. Again, it's Chapter 6, legal and ethical issues. But we're going to be continuing with the previous chapter, Chapter 5, Principle 43 and 44. But before we do, Professor, I'd just like, we're constantly getting new listeners. If you don't mind sharing what makes this book different from others. I mean, it's called Entrepreneurial Success. If anyone was to go to the local bookstore, the public library, they'll see countless books on the shelf on entrepreneurial, you know, success. What makes this book different than others?
Well, mine has 105 principles, and basically what I try to do with the principles is I try to make them something you can actually do. And the example I usually use, because it's very quick and to the point, is if you wanted to start, you had a business and you needed a roadside sign, a billboard, how would you do that? Well, if you go to most textbooks, they'll spend pages and pages talking about how you ought to do it this way and what kind of things you ought to do and so on. Well, mine is simple. It's a rule of seven. If you want a billboard that's going to be read, you're allowed one picture and seven words. And if you have more than seven words, when people are driving down the highway, they're not going to read it, because they have to take time from their eyes on the road to look at the sign, focus on it, and start reading it, understand what the picture is, and then start reading it. And you only have a very, very, very brief moment, unless you have a photographic memory, which most people don't. So where other books will have pages on how to do this, and when you get through, you ask yourself, okay, so I want a roadside sign. They've told me all these things to do. How do I actually do it? Mm-hmm. And in most cases, the answer is beats me. But with mine, it's you're allowed one picture and seven words. And so you got to get your message in that period of time. And your message has to be, who are you? Not necessarily where are you, or more precisely, how do I get there? And those are the two bits of information that you need to send. Don't need to tell them how good you are. Don't need to say why you ought to come to me rather than somebody else. You don't have time for that. You have seven words. And so, who are you, where are you, and how do I get there? And you got to do that in seven words. Not eight, not ten, but seven.
Or less.
So it's simple.
Or less, correct? Not more than seven.
Yep, you can have less, but you can't have more.
You know, again, in the book is, again, I've had the opportunity of reading it several times, and again, there are principles in here that are not just for business, but for life as well. To everybody, during the course of this show, we'll tell you how you can get the book, and you'll want to get the book, trust me. You can, you know, some people might think, well, I'll just listen to the shows and get the information. Well, the shows, we can only cover so much within an hour, okay? But in the book, there are principles and more examples in the book. Professor delves into examples on the principles. So you definitely don't shortchange yourself by just saying, okay, I'll just listen to the show. I mean, as awesome as the information is that you're getting on the show, just, you know, wait till you get the book, okay? So, Professor, I wanted to ask you this also before we got started, too, because, you know, at some point in everybody's entrepreneurial life, they're going to experience something. There are going to be days, there are going to be good days when you wake up and you're so glad you did, you made the choice to become an entrepreneur. And then there may be other days where you wake up and you ask yourself, why in the world did I do this? You know,
yep.
When you were out there and in the business world as an entrepreneur, was there ever a point where it got to, you just said, you know, I don't, you know, I'm ready to throw in the towel, you know? And the reason I ask this is because I read a book once where there was talk, and the gentleman was talking, was saying, don't quit 3 feet before the gold. And he gave an example of entrepreneur who had gone out and started digging for gold, had rented all this equipment to go out, and, you know, he was part of the gold rush, and, you know, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to strike it rich. And he bought all, or rented all this equipment and went out there, and, you know, after digging and digging and digging and digging and digging, you know, he just got tired of it, and, you know, I don't know why I'm doing this or whatever, and he quit. And then somebody else came and said, you know what, I think there's gold. I just don't think he dug, you know, long enough, and only dug 3 feet and struck gold, you know, or oil,
yeah,
or whatever
yep,
the was. So was there ever a point where you felt like, you know, I don't know why I'm doing this, because people oftentimes say that your breakthrough is going to come on the other side of that feeling. Right when you feel like giving up, if you can just press your way through just a little longer, just hold on, then on the other side of that feeling, that then, you know, oftentimes that's when the breakthrough comes.
Well, yeah, there have been a lot of times when, boy, I go home at night and say, geez, why am I doing this? You know, I could make a pretty good living working for somebody else and let them take the risk. And but I think one of the qualities that you have to have is don't ever give up. And you just stay in there. And of course, sometimes you that is taken out of your hands. You're forced to. But short of that, don't give up. And what I've really learned over time is the better you plan, the less likely you are to have those kind of things happen to you. And, you know, you talk about digging for gold or something like that. Well, most of us are never, ever going to do that. But sometimes we have a good idea. And one that comes to mind right now is a part of women's apparel is the bra. And believe it or not, the person who invented it was a 16-year-old girl. And she invented it. She liked it. She made, and then a lot of her friends liked it, and she started making them. But she quit. And she ended up selling her patent. She had it patented, fortunately. She sold her patent for not very much to a corset manufacturer. Made women's corsets. At that time, there were no bras. And within 6 months, they almost stopped making corsets, and within a year, they had totally stopped making corsets and had made millions in the bra. And
wow.
Had that young lady just thought, had some help, some direction, she could have done way, way better than she did.
Mm.
And that's the sort of thing there's a chance that all of us will come up with some kind of an idea. Maybe not as world-changing as that one, but pretty good. And but the better you plan, the more likely you are to succeed. And you should start your planning before you start spending money. And once you start spending money, well, hopefully you work your plan. and make sure that the plan is grounded on reality and not on fantasy.
Well, everybody, we're going through the book, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. We're going through chapter by chapter, principle by principle. We're currently in Chapter 5, Starting a Business, and I'm sure that we'll be finished with Chapter 5 this evening, and maybe we'll get into Chapter 6. But the 43rd principle, the second to the last principle in Chapter 5, is the guy with the gold makes the rules. Again, this is from the Buying a Business chapter. That's the title of this chapter, Buying a Business. And the principle is, number 43, the guy with the gold makes the rules. Professor?
Well, I put that in there because a lot of people think that if they have the 51% of the business, that they will have control of it. And while technically that is true, quite frankly, the person who has the financial muscle very often is the one who is in control. And it's a lot of people say, well, that isn't right. They didn't do anything. All they did was supply the money. In some instances, frankly, quite often, all they did was co-sign a note. They didn't even put up any of their own money. They signed the note, and that's how they got there. But if you have the financial muscle, and a person is dependent upon you to keep supplying money, you're in a very, very vulnerable position. So my suggestion is, if you find somebody who supplies the money, find out what they want. In other words, ask them what kind of percentage they want of the company. And if they say 51%, you're going to get squeezed out. If they say 48 or 49%, you're not going to get squeezed out so long as everything works perfectly. If they have a lower percentage, well, then maybe you won't get squeezed out at all. And if you're in a situation where they're going to be putting up most of the funds, well, perhaps what you ought to do is find somebody else who can also put up money, and so you have two sources. Fortunately, today, there are systems that I never had when I built businesses, and those are the internet, and you can go to Indiegogo or one of those online, and hundreds of millions of dollars are being raised all the time. And they have a really big advantage in that it is raised in small amounts usually. So I would suggest to you that you you get my book and you read in the book how you do that, because there is a certain way that you really need to do it. Now, somebody like me is at a big disadvantage because I'm not on in the media, and I'm not in social media. So if you're somebody who has 200 or 300 or 400 people who follow you on your Facebook or whatever it is, you got a real chance. Where I really don't have that because I don't have those kind of connections. But if you do, that is a way to raise money that is where this won't happen to you. Because the guy with the gold is not one guy. It's probably hundreds of guys and gals with the gold who give you $25 or $50 or $150 or some small amount. And but there's a way to do that successfully. And there's probably four dozen ways that won't work. But there is one way that will work, and you need to be able to follow it. And that pretty well negates this thing. It used to be that most small businesses were started by family, friends, and the founders were the three money sources. Like 90% of all business was funded that way. Another 9% were funded by they called angel investors, and those were the guys who had the gold and could take over. But nowadays, with Indiegogo and there's several others. They were the first, and I have a very little experience with those, but some, and know how to do it. And I go through it in great detail and make sure you follow the details, because it is very, very important to do that. And your odds of success are, frankly, pretty good.
Everybody, you see why you need this book, right? And again, Professor goes into detail, more detail and examples in the book. So again, we'll tell you how you can get this book during the course of the show. The last principle in Chapter 4 is try it before you buy it. Again, we're talking about buying a business. That is the subject of tonight's show. That's the part two of buying a business. Try it before you buy it. Professor, very interesting title. I'd like to, can't wait to get into that. Please, take it away. Try it before you buy it.
Well, in other words, each business has certain things about it that differ from others. And I have tried a number of businesses. I've been a manufacturer. I've been a service provider. I have been a retailer. And I can tell you from experience that just because you're a wonderful retailer does not make you very good at being a manufacturer. And because you're really good at supplying a service, whether it's everything from a paper route to constructing a building or being an electrician or whatever, any of those, that's the easiest to do. The next more difficult is being a retailer, because now all of a sudden you have inventory that you have to deal with, and lots of people and lots of advertising, which makes it more difficult. And the most difficult of all is being a manufacturer, because you start with raw materials, and then you have what the accountants called WIP, work in progress. You have finished goods. You have all the sales. You have all the service. I mean, you got everything that the other two have, but you also have to make this thing. So it is the most difficult of all of them, and I would highly recommend that you go to work for somebody who is in that business. If you think you want to start a McDonald's restaurant, go to work for a McDonald's, and it doesn't make any difference what you do. I mean, if it were me, and I went there, and they said, well, the only thing I have that you can do here is clear tables. Yes, sir, I'm up for that. I don't care whether you pay me or not. I wouldn't tell them that, but I really wouldn't, because that's not my purpose. My purpose is to learn what's going on. And so that the try it before you buy it really means to learn how it works. If it's a franchise, what is that particular franchisee or franchisor like to work for? Do they insist on you coming to make sure that you do a good job of delivering the product? Is that really important to you? Do they force you to come to yearly meetings where they teach you that sort of thing? Is that really important? Do they want a upfront lump sum? Or do they say, well, you can start this franchise for $10,000 down, but you have to pay us 10% of the gross? If that's the case, a lot of people say, I don't want anything to do with that, because they're taking a bunch of the profits. Well, just remember, you have to have profits for them to take it. And if you don't succeed, they lose and you lose. So the guy who wants the $100,000 up front and then you're on your own, you never need to see me again, basically it's what he's hoping for is you fail. Because then he can take that same franchise area and resell it to another sucker for $100,000. But if they say, well, you only have to come up with $10,000 up front, but we want 10%, basically what they're telling you is we care about you. We want you to succeed. Because if you don't succeed, we don't get our 10% every month.
Interesting. You know, it just reminds me, even talking about this, is the show Shark Tank, where entrepreneurs, hopefuls, you know, or people come up with ideas for, you know, they might have had a patent on something or you know, just an entrepreneurial idea, and they come before the board of investors, likely investors, people who would likely in the business. And then, you know, in many cases, the people are asking for, like, maybe half, 50%. Give me 50%, and I want 50% of the business. And oftentimes, that's too steep a price to pay for the entrepreneur. You know, I've heard, watched the show, and many of them, in cases like that, say, you know what, I can't give you that. That's just, I can't give you that. But if you're not careful, just thinking that somebody sees enough in your business that they would be willing to say, yeah, I'd like to go in half with you. You know, that can be a flattering thing. You know, if you're not if you're not careful, you give away the farm.
Well, one of the things when that happens is, what are you going to say when I have to come back for more money? So you the investor, cough up $100,000, and then 9 months from now, we're almost there. We're at break even, but in order to continue, we have to have another $20,000. What then? And that needs best be settled beforehand, because maybe what then is, I want another 25%. And if you say no, well then the company's out of business, and because I'm the biggest investor, I get to take over. And I'll put it in, and now I have 100%. So you need to find that out kind of ahead of time. But the more likely you are to succeed, the more you know about the business, the better business plan you have, and the plan is based on real information because you worked there. So if I wanted to start one of these car places where you take it in, they change the oil, and you do they do a lube job and all of that, I'd go to work there. And like, I don't care whether my job is to clean up the rags, to sweep the floor. I want to be there and see what the heck's going on and how they do it and talk to the boss and you know, find out what it's really like, because I don't care how well you think you know it, you don't know it anywhere nearly as well as the person who's been doing it for a bunch of years. And they know the pitfalls, and you don't.
You know, Professor, that really speaks to a mindset, you know, your mindset, because oftentimes people go to work for other people. You know, just on a regular, even if a person, say, for example, is not going into a job to try to learn it, to learn all the nuances, the ins and outs of, you know, not just the position, but the business itself. You know, to go in there with that mindset that, okay, I'll just clean, I'm just, hey, if you want me to clean the rags or clear the tables, I'll do that. But all the while you're doing that, your antennas are up, you know, you're listening, you're talking, you have a plan, you have a thought that, okay, I'm doing this, I'm here for a purpose. And nobody else has to know what that is. Nobody else has to know that you're there to learn, you know. But oftentimes people on their regular 9-to-5 just go in, do their job, get their paycheck, and go home. Not that, you know, and they might not be trying to, it might not even, you know, let's say, for example, you take somebody that's working in the government. You know, they're not trying to, you know, take over the government, you know what I mean? But, you know, you trying to get a better job. You could be trying to advance, you know, and
right.
the mindset that comes along with what you were just sharing, I think is important to have, especially as an entrepreneur. You have to be on the lookout. You have to have your antennas up. You have to be looking for opportunities, and you have to be open to learn.
That's absolutely the case. And you, and to me, that anybody who goes, I've worked for a couple of other people, but boy, I'll tell you, my antennas were up the whole time, even though I hadn't, you know, in my case, it was late in life and I had no interest in starting another job, but I did have an interest in learning how they did things and why things worked and why things didn't work. And so I always did that, and it certainly made the job a lot more interesting. Mm-hmm. And for a younger person to do that, I think they're foolish. I mean, they may go into a job and end up in something totally different. But if they have their antennas up, they will learn, and they will see mistakes that were made that they don't want to make. And the only way
right.
you can do that is to keep your antennas up and to keep learning, but learn on somebody else's dime rather than your own. In my case, I succeeded in mostly learning on my own dime, and it made for a very expensive education.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, I've told many of my classes that just one of the mistakes I made, if I had a class of 25 people, I lost enough money on that one bad mistake to pay for their education up to and including a PhD and all their housing and everything else is what I lost on that one mistake. I wished I'd have watched somebody else make it, so I didn't make it, but I did.
Hmm. Wow. You say you live and you learn, and experience is the best teacher, right?
Right.
But
yeah.
you don't want experience to teach you. You want to get the book, okay, so that you can let Geiger's experience be
that's
your teacher,
right.
and that's why we're doing today. Professor, we're kind of halfway through the show, and if you don't mind, let's tell the listeners how they can get the book. I don't want to assume that everybody, you know, that starts to listen to the show we'll finish listening to the show just simply because this is life. Sometimes people tune in and tune out. They
sure.
have to go, and I don't want them to go before they actually hear how they can get your book.
Well, you can get it at Amazon, and just go to the book section there and plug in Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, and make sure you put the 105 Business Principles in there, because there's a whole lot of entrepreneurial success books out there. When I first started, there weren't very many, but I guess people liked the name, and so there's lots of them now. But if you put in Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, it'll take you right to it. And it has a rather spectacular photograph of a mountain road weaving up a mountain, actually, in China.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how you get it. The other way is you can go to my own website, theroadtothetop.com, and that goes to me. The price of the book's the same. The only difference is I sign it if it comes from me. And it's a great
thing. And they can also get...
It's $17.95, so it's slightly less than $18.
And that is probably the best investment that you will ever make. I mean, just simply because of all the principles that you've gotten that much out of the book just by listening to the show so far.
Probably so.
You know, so if you get the book, I mean, I guarantee you that you're going to really, really gain so much more than what you put out for the book, for sure. Professor, they can also get the cash flow forecast
right.
by going to your website, correct?
They can. And the cash flow forecast that I have is a 26-page answer the questions type. It does all the math. It asks all the questions. All you got to do is answer it. If you're starting a hot dog stand, the vast majority of the questions don't apply to you, and you just leave them blank. And if you're starting You wanted to start a Ford dealership that had, it's a very intricate business with all kinds of stuff, a shop, retail, a used and new and finance, all kinds of stuff in there. It'll do that too. So it's just a pure fill in the blanks. And when you get through, you'll end up with a cash flow that will tell you whether you're going to go broke, and if so, when.
Very, very, very important piece of information. Also,
yeah.
I just want to let everybody, move into the next chapter, let everybody know that these shows are archived. So Professor Geiger's shows, the previous ones, if you're just tuning in and you missed those shows, you can go back and get up to speed. Again, these shows are archived, so we're on Chapter 6, and we started, of course, with Chapter 1. So if you want to go back and start listening to the other shows, it bring you up to speed. But again, remember, very important, unless you think that, you know, I'll just listen to the shows and won't get the book, well, the book is full of examples that we can't cover them all in 1 hour. So you really want to – I wouldn't shortchange myself – like that. I would definitely get the book, and especially with the holidays coming up, it'd be a perfect gift for someone that you know that is either an entrepreneur or considering becoming an entrepreneur, or if you're already one yourself, you can always use more information on how to be successful. And here are 105 tips that you can use to benefit you in your business. So moving into Chapter 6, legal and ethical issues. That's the title of Chapter 6. Legal and ethical issues. Very, 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 very important chapter. You definitely want to pay close attention. Principle number 45 is there are legal issues, business issues, and ethics issues. Keep them separate. Again, there are legal issues, business issues, and ethics issues. Keep them separate, Professor.
Yeah, well, first before we get into it, let me just tell the audience that I am a non-attorney. I'm not an attorney. I'm not giving advice, and this is to keep me from getting sued. So if you the advice that I'm giving you, the things I'll talk about here are great for background. They'll help you a lot. They'll keep you out of court in some cases, but I am not an attorney, so I am not giving any legal advice. So with that behind us now, there are legal issues, business issues, and ethical issues. In this country, for some strange reason, we seem to think that whenever you have a tough issue, you go to an attorney. Well, let me tell you, having paid probably the better part of $1 million in attorney's fees, that is an extraordinarily expensive way of doing it. And the result of it, it will not be terribly satisfying. It'll cost you a lot of money, and the end result is you end up saying, boy, this was an expensive lesson, and I wish I didn't have to take it, but I did. And had I seen this coming, I probably wouldn't have taken it. So just remember that the courts are something to be avoided, if at all possible. It's just you. Unless you've done it, there is no way that you can be prepared for the costs of defending or bringing a lawsuit. That they mount today in a small metropolitan area like Richmond, Virginia, you cannot hire, I do not think that you can hire a business attorney for less than $300 an hour. And a hour starts when you say hello, and it ends when you say goodbye. In the meantime, it is running. And any research that they do, which is usually a lot, is $300 an hour. And you have to take their word for it.
So to
run up a $25,000 bill for a to defend yourself, I paid that 20 years ago, and today it would be $50,000 or $75,000 for just the attorney's bill, and then there's always other things. So attorneys are horribly expensive. So for starters, don't go to an attorney unless you need to. If you go to an attorney, make sure you already have written out the questions you want answered. And then write out to yourself, why do I want this question answered? Because anything you can do to cut down the amount of time you're going to spend with the attorney will save you lots and lots of money. So don't go to them with a business question, issue, unless it is something that has to do with the law. But short of that, if it isn't that way, avoid the attorney, because it's, one, they're not very well equipped to answer those kind of questions. They don't have the background. They don't have the business acumen. There's a whole lot of things they don't have. Now, they may be wonderful attorneys, but they're not accountants, and they're not marketers. They're not interpersonal relationship people. So, you know, just make sure you understand that attorneys are for things that have to do with the law and nothing else. There's some other ways you can help yourself, and that goes to, you can go to Prepaid Legal, Zoom.com, Incorporate.com, QuickCorporation.com. There's a whole lot of places you can go that you can get basic advice. So the last corporation that I had that was set up by an attorney is probably 25 years ago, and it cost me $3,000, and I thought I got a pretty fair deal. The last one that I set up was actually I did it for one of my students, and it cost $200, and I think she got her money's worth. She got all the corporate records. It was every bit as well set up as the one that I spent $3,000 for 25 years ago, which means that today it would be pushing $10,000 for the same darn thing. So just make sure that you, before you go starting to talk to an attorney, you explore other ways. And if you get the book, my book, it'll tell you a bunch of the other ways. What to do and what not to do. Don't do, if somebody says, well, I'll be your partner, not if you're a general partner, you won't be mine, because I don't care whether you have a method of turning dirt into gold. If the deal is a general partnership, I'm not going to be part of it, period, amen, that's it. And the reason I'll tell you in the book. If it's a absolute sure thing and so on, if it's a that kind of a partnership, I'm not part of it. There's C corporations, S corporations, LLCs, all kinds of things. My book goes through them, you know, one at a time, tells you the ups and downs of each one of them, and what it costs to do it. And like I say, the last corporation that I set up myself was about 3 years ago, and it was 4 years ago, and it was cost me $200. And then a year later, I set up one for my student, or she did. I just, you know, took her by the hand and guided her through it, and it cost her $200. And in both cases, the only thing other than that we had to buy was a three-wing loose-leaf notebook and a hole punch.
You know, that is very important. That's a very important principle right there. Just simply because, you know, for the new entrepreneur, the budding entrepreneur, they don't know. They don't know the difference between a legal issue, a business issue, and an ethical issue. And, you know, what you just said, again, that's another principle that was worth the cost of the book. Okay? That there was just worth the cost of the book. So you got a deal just by hearing that. So definitely pay close attention to that, because you don't want to spend your hard-earned money running around in circles giving it to attorneys if you don't have to, that's for sure. Professor, do we have time to go into, of all of the company structures that a general partnership
I can go through that. I mentioned before that if you had a organization that was a general partnership, and there's all kinds of partnerships. So when I say general partnership, that's a legal term, and it means something very specific. And what it means is that all the partners have equal rights, which means that if somebody sues the company, they're going to sue each partner individually, and you are individually liable for anything and everything that the company does financially. Now, if somebody in the company does a criminal act, you're not criminally liable, but you most certainly are civilly liable for all the consequences for the criminal act. So you won't go to jail, but you may have to pay the costs. And even though you were out of town, you were in Hawaii with your family enjoying life when this thing happened, you're personally liable. Your kids are personally, their college fund is personally liable. Everything is personally liable. So just remember, if it's a general corporation, don't do it. I don't care how good it is. And it's there's a lot of college books that say the one of the reasons to do a simple partnership is it costs less. Well, there was a time when that may have been true, although I'm not entirely sure that's the case. I don't think it was ever really true, but it most certainly is not true now, because you can go to Corporation 39, I think it is. It's called our 39 Corporation. And it costs you $39 to get a corporate stuff set up, plus the state fees. So here in Virginia, the state fees are $100. And so it's $139 for Virginia. And then if you want all the paperwork, have it all set up so when you go to the bank and you want to set up a bank account, you have the paperwork for it, and so on. And that costs $60. So it's $200, or at least it was two, three years ago, maybe even down lower than that now. But do not have anything to do with a general corporation, a general partnership, rather. And because you are civilly and liable for everything that happens. See if I can find here the exact words. I'm not finding it. I thought I could just go right to it, but that's my luck today is I'm not finding it. But just remember that for every action that it take. Now, let's say that you and I and four other people had a construction corporation. It was a general partnership, so we're all equal partners. And we finished a big project, and they paid us $10 million, and it hit the bank on Friday morning. And everybody said, let's go have a big party. So I tell everybody, hey, my wife's a little sick, so I'll pass on the party. So I go to the bank. I draw out $9.5 million, transfer that to an account in Rio. My wife and I and our two kids hop on the on airplane, and come Monday morning, we're ensconced in Rio with this $9.5 million, and you guys just now found out that you can't pay any of your bills. It's all gone. Well, guess what? What I did was legal enough that I'm free. When somebody comes to collect what you bought from them, all the lumber, and you say, well, the money's in Rio and Geiger has it, go get him. Mm-hmm. And they say, you got to be kidding me, pal. I'm not going to Rio. I'm going here. I'm here. Mm-hmm. So what's your house worth? What's your car worth? Wow. How much money do you have in your kids' college fund? Guess what? I just scooped it. And so you can sue me in Rio for that, but good luck, because you won't have any. So that's what I mean. It sounds overly harsh, but those are the facts of it. And attorneys may try to make it sound so it's not quite so bad, but it's bad. It's very,
because
very
bad. Because they want your money too. Want
well,
your
sure.
money too, so they want you to
yeah.
hire them, so they tell you that yeah, I can
yeah.
get it. I can get your money back.
Yeah, sure you can. And I'm in Rio, or I'm in Tahiti, and I'm living the good life, and I'm going to continue it, and you're stuck.
Mm.
So all the partners are 100% personally liable and civilly liable for anything that the partnership does. Any one of the partnership does it. You're all... It, well, here we go. I found it. Jointly and severally. So you are jointly liable as five members of this mythical partnership, and you're severally liable, which means that each member of the partnership is liable for the full $9.5 million. And I'm in Rio or in Tahiti, and you're here. So guess what? So just remember that it, and people will say, well, it's a lot cheaper to set up a partnership. That's patently not true, because in a partnership, each of the partners must say what in writing, how much they earn, what they're going to do, what their job is, how much they put in, all that stuff has to be written up. In a corporation, it does not. You write up the corporation, and then the corporation decides to issue stock. So each of us are equally, so each of the five of us get 100 shares. And boom, done. And we decide in a corporate meeting who's going to do what. I'm going to wash the dishes, and you're going to do whatever. So that's how that, but in a partnership, all of that has to be spelled out in the partnership papers. If I get sick and I leave the partnership, well, guess what? The partnership's done. It's got to be reformed, because the partnership was the five of us. Well, now there's four. Geiger's sick. He's gone. So there is no partnership. So you got to reform. Now, you could choose to reform an LLC or a C-Corp or an S-Corp, but you got to reform something. In a corporation, that's not the case. Geiger's gone. Big deal. The rest of us go on. So if we're five of us and we wanted to hire one other guy, and he said, I'll come with you as long as I become an equal partner, guess what? The partnership isn't worth a damn. The partnership was with the five of us, not with six, but with five. And they were named five. Go ahead.
What if somebody wants to buy somebody off, you know, buy them out? Or buy their...
Well, usually there's what's called a buy-sell agreement. And so you want to buy out. And let's say you're the financial strength of it. And there's two of us in this, and you're the financial strength, and so you say, Geiger, I think I want to buy you out. I'm taking all the financial risk. You really aren't. So your 500 shares, I'll offer you $100 for each share. And you say, hey man, that's ridiculous. There's more money in that. And he says, yeah, but there's way more debts too. So you can take my $5,000, or good for 1 week or whatever it's spelled out, or you can buy me out for $500 a share, or $100 a share, whatever the offer was. And then I have a week to come up with the $5,000. if I can't, then you're probably going to win. Now, the buy-sell agreement supposedly keeps everybody happy. The problem is it keeps the guy with the gold happy, because whatever amount is comes up, if it's reasonable, he can do it. But because I'm not as wealthy as you are, I can't. So the buy-sell agreement sounds wonderful, but it's only wonderful with the guy with the gold. It's not quite so wonderful the guy without the gold.
Wow. I've really thoroughly enjoyed this this interview, Professor. You know, the interviews are such that whenever we do them, they go so fast. You know, when it comes time for the interview to end, it's like I want to keep going, but I have to be respectful of your time. You know, so everybody want to make sure that you know that Professor will be back on next Tuesday, okay, from 7 to 8 p.m. And if you want to follow along, we'll be on principle number 47. Between now and then, get the book. Again, it's called Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. Professor Geiger gives away, but you can get a cash flow forecast as well when you purchase the book, because you're going to need that if you're an entrepreneur. Very important document. You definitely want to make sure that you get that and you fill it out. Professor, and they get that again by going to theroadtothetop.com?
Right. And it costs $15.
$15. Wow.
Yeah.
What a deal.
What a deal.
What a deal. Giving this book away. I mean, really, this book is worth so much more than that. Again, everybody, the holidays are coming up. I know you know somebody that wants to start their own business. You've talked about it. You've thought about it. You've kicked it around in your head. And you can do it. You know, there's just a way to do it. You got to have a guide if you've never done it before. You certainly need somebody to show you how to do it. I mean, so get the book, okay, and then follow along with us every 2 weeks, but Professor will be back on next Tuesday. So, again, Professor, thank you so much. Great interview. Thank you so much for, agreeing to come on and share your wealth of knowledge. Over 50 years experience as an entrepreneur. Wow. We're in a very fortunate position to have him come on to share that information with us. Thank you, Professor. I look forward to the next one.
Right on. Looking forward to. Bye for now.
All right. Take care. Everybody, that's, again, Professor Joseph Geiger, author of the book Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. This is the fourth edition. This book just keeps on growing and growing and growing. If you're serious about becoming an entrepreneur, then you want to stack the odds in your favor. You don't want to just go out there with an idea. There's just certain things that you're going to need. You're going to need a business plan. You're going to need a cash flow forecast. Okay? You're going to need to have certain information that you are familiar with. You're going to need to, just have at your fingertips information that you can read. You're going to need to read, okay, so that when situations arise, and they will arise, how do I know? Because this is life. Stuff happens, right? Okay? You want to minimize the chances of you not responding to certain challenges in a certain way. You want to be successful, right? That's the goal. You want to be successful. But you have to be challenged. But your challenges don't have to come because you were not prepared. So prepare yourself for this venture. It's a journey. It can be very rewarding. It can be very lucrative, okay? So, but you got to know what you're doing. You can't just jump out there. You got to make sure that you're prepared. Prepare yourself. Get the book, Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top by Joseph T. Geiger. Thank you so much, everybody, for your time. To all of the new listeners, thank you so much. Welcome. Share this information with other people. Again, you can follow the show. All you have to do is just click follow if you're listening online. And again, look forward to seeing you next time. My name is Jawanza. Who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you? Peace.